This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit villageofbedfordpark.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Wednesday afternoon, August 12th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Chicago's empty office buildings are finding new life and new residents. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But first, inflation cooled last month, easing pressure on consumers and reducing expectations of a Fed interest rate hike. Welcome in Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Consumer prices rising 0.1% in July. That was right in line with expectations. The annual rate, 3.4%. The core rate is about 2.5%. What does that mean for the overall fight against inflation?
Well, I'd like to say that it's over, but it's not. And I think most consumers know that. We did see a lot of discounting by big box discounters and grocery store chains, which helped to nudge down just a bit food prices during the month, although food when you eat out actually accelerated during the month, so that offset some of those gains. And I think that's important as well. What we're looking at is the core services, and that's after stripping out shelter costs. Core services is over half of the PCE index, which the Federal Reserve targets, and that's been very sticky. We're seeing everything from medical costs to airfares going up. That's everything from aging demographics to very wealthy baby boomers able to buoy those inflation numbers in the service sector. We've also seen wages cool below the overall inflation number, but benefits. And that is the part that's also feeding into that service sector inflation. So we still have more to come. We know that much of the rise in prices at the gas pump are going to show up in August. Diesel prices went up much more than gas prices, and we know that shows up in just about everything we buy with about a month lag. So again, the turnaround that we saw in oil prices during the month of August is going to come back and haunt us. I'm sorry, during the month of July is going to come back and haunt us in August, at the same time that underlying service sector inflation that hawks within the Fed are so concerned about is still there. Do we get a September hike? Markets aren't pricing it in at this moment in time, but there's still going to be a lot of push before the end of the year for hawks within the Fed system to raise interest rates. And I think once we get more inflation data as the year progresses, that you're going to see more pressure on the Fed to hike rates before year end.
When we talk about the fight against inflation for the last 5 years, it really has been a gas prices story. It's also been an economic capacity story. But one part that's really hasn't really shown up yet, Diane, but it's showing up in the numbers, is that elevated services inflation and some of the factors underlying it. And that really is more of a wealth creation effect. A lot of households that have investments have done very well in this age of AI, and they can spend that money and, as you point out, drive up the price of various goods like healthcare and airline tickets.
Exactly. And it's part of the reason why the overall economic data, where it shows the consumer is robust and still spending, yet consumers say they don't feel so good about the economy. Well, those economic aggregates mask that inequality. And I think that's really important because we have much more inequality than we did in the past. Income inequalities hit a trough in 1980. That's a long time ago. And wealth inequalities have only worsened. The top 1% of households now account for over half of all equity and mutual fund holdings, according to the Federal Reserve. The top 10% account for 89% of all equity and mutual fund holdings in the U.S. economy. That is just stunning kind of numbers to see. And it really is creating a tale of two economies, but one that ends up with inflation persisting longer. And 5 years in, we're also getting this muscle memory of inflation that hawks are worried about, that the Fed's inflation fighting credibility, it's been through a lot of reasons, but the bottom line is at the end of the day, it's the Fed's job to derail that inflation.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, from empty offices to apartments, a look at the transformation underway across downtown Chicago.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Empty offices are creating an opportunity to remake downtown Chicago as developers pour billions into converting outdated buildings into apartments, hotels, and other new uses. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Mario Greco, founder of MG Group at Compass in Chicago. Mario, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And Mario, this reminds me an awful lot of 20 to 25 years ago when there were a number of unused factories and warehouses that were turned into loft apartments and condos. And that kicked off the great migration back into the city. All of a sudden, the South Loop and the Near West Side, they were the hip places to be.
Yeah, that's true. It's very reminiscent of that. In addition, it's reminding me of the 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008 burst of apartment conversions. And the whole thrust of this is to create more housing as more and more of it gets used up with populations moving back to Chicago.
Now, we have a significant reduction in the amount of office space or office space that's being used in downtown Chicago, just because we all learned how to work remotely during the pandemic. People are going into the office 3 days a week. You don't necessarily have to have an office. You can share a desk with somebody. And cutting that monthly rent to the building is a good way to reduce expenses. But the owners of those buildings, well, they have a lot of empty space, and that is where these apartment conversions come in. Developers are spending billions of dollars on these projects, so clearly they feel confident they'll pay off.
Yes, especially with the rising rents that we've been seeing in Chicago, even pre-COVID. This is the best use for the building that developers are starting to see, and it's bringing more people back downtown, despite not having to be there for the office time. And it's also invigorating sort of the loop, and the areas that were office heavy are now becoming more residential, and there's more businesses coming in to downtown. Whereas, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago at 5:30, the loop became a ghost town. Now there's a lot more entertainment, shopping, and other things happening after traditional work hours.
Now, let's talk about some of the second order effects, because at the beginning of the segment, I talked about the factory and loft conversion efforts that took place several decades ago that turned the South Loop into an actual residential neighborhood. And all of a sudden, you saw massive waves of business investment to accommodate the people who live there. How could the LaSalle Street office corridor, for example, how could that be transformed if all of a sudden people live there and it doesn't clear out at 5 o'clock and there are other people walking LaSalle Street at all times of day outside of just the men and women in blue jackets?
Yeah, well, one thing you're seeing in these conversions is there's ground floor space that needs to be used or adaptively reused, and that you're starting to see plans for restaurants and other entertainment venues coming down. So that's going to be sort of the gradual change. In addition, it's no accident that Google is putting their new headquarters where the State of Illinois building used to be, and it's, you can call it a chicken or the egg situation, but did Google spur the office conversion or vice versa? So there's a lot of new use coming downtown, which will make it a much more residential neighborhood.
And then could this also potentially solve to a certain degree the housing affordability crisis that is bedeviled policymakers from coast to coast?
It could, except rents are likely going to go even higher despite there being more supply added, because the attractiveness of living downtown is going to go up that much higher. So yes, the goal is that it's going to help the affordable housing situation, but it may not, or if it does, it won't do it as quickly as we'd hope.
Mario Greco, founder of the MG Group at Compass in Chicago, thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, why Bally's is hitting the brakes on parts of its Chicago casino project.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Bally's is slowing construction of its Chicago casino campus, using the project as leverage in its fight with City Hall over video gambling. Let's bring on Justin Lawrence, reporter with Crane Chicago Business. Justin, thank you for joining us today. And is that the whole story, that this is just merely about the recent legislation regarding sweepstakes machines in Chicago?
Well, I mean, that's what we're all trying to figure out. That is what Bally's claims. You know, it should be worth noting they've had prior delays and hiccups at the construction site as well. But, you know, this is kind of an escalation. They have said since the city council legalized video gambling and the terminals that we've seen in bars and restaurants in Chicago that essentially changed the gaming landscape in Chicago, and that upended their deal with the city, and they're going to take legal action. So now this is the latest, you know, kind of front in that, where they're using the pace of construction at that site and really the union workers that are doing that construction as leverage in their fight to get city council to go back on that and again ban video gambling machines in Chicago.
At the same time, the company says it still plans to open the casino in early 2027. So even though there's a construction slowdown, it's still on schedule.
Yeah, and they are saying, you know, that they are continuing to build the casino, the gaming floor itself, and I believe a food hall and parking garage that all support the gaming aspect of that. And what they're pausing is all the other stuff, the hotel and restaurants that are outside of the casino, event space, all the other stuff that comes, you know, kind of in their view, a feature of a real large casino rather than, you know, kind of just video gambling across the city. But that's going to be put to the test. The city council is pushing back, you know, calling on them to restart that, and that they're going to hold a hearing to kind of probe all of this. So it's certainly not the last of this. And as we go through the end of the year and the city council, you know, puts forward a 2027 budget, I don't think that this is going away until it's settled one way or the other, potentially in court.
Now, Bally's is building what they hope to be a world-class destination gambling and entertainment spot for people across the entire Midwest. Does their belief that sweepstakes machines and neighborhood joints far, far away from the casino, that it could potentially harm their business, does that pass muster?
I mean, that's their argument. There is video gambling allowed in other municipalities across the state where there are casinos, and they seem to be earning a living and profit in those locations, the casinos, I mean. But, you know, it's certainly their position, and they're really going at lengths to try to block it. You know, in the agreement they have with the city, it does say that if the city were to legalize video gambling, that it would require a good faith renegotiation of these $4 million annual payments that Bally's agreed to pay. They argue that it reopens much more of that agreement up for negotiation, and the city council says that's not the case. And the administration of Mayor Brandon Johnson, who opposes video gambling, has been somewhat mum on exactly what should be renegotiated since video gambling was legalized.
Justin Lawrence, reporter, Crane Chicago Business.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Noon Business Hour continues, sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Markets are higher. Joining us with the latest in what's moving Wall Street is J.J. Kinahan, Senior Vice President, CBOE Global Markets in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And how are the markets reacting to today's inflation report, the Consumer Price Index?
Well, I think it's taking it really well. And obviously, the market's been up since those numbers have come out, and just kind of have hung around all day, you know, with the SPX, the S&P 500, up about $24 right now. It's been in a pretty tight range and, quite honestly, a fairly slow trading day. and really slow trading week from a volume point of view. But, you know, CPI came in and matched the expectations. And I think the part that gave people some solace was that the energy prices were actually a little bit lower for the month. And so right now, in my opinion, given what's going on with the conflict in Iran, et cetera, I think that a steady as she goes is going to continue to be well received by the market.
And of course, this is just one of three inflation readings you get on a monthly basis. The producer price index, the wholesale index is the other number. And then, of course, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge is the personal consumption index. So we have many more opportunities, JJ, to talk about inflation and whether or not they will change the Fed math.
Absolutely, we do, Rob. But, you know, I think the positive right now, quite honestly, has just been the earnings story. And the earnings story continues to drive us higher as long as nothing gets in the way. You know, there's the old expression, earnings drive stocks, stocks drive markets. And right now, the earnings picture has just been a phenomenal one. We're on track to come in with the seventh consecutive quarter of double-digit gains in earnings. So when people say, why has the market been up so much the last couple of weeks, that's really the story.
And then what are some of the real highlights for you? Because it seems like another through line in earnings season has just been a lot of the AI anxiety being quelled by a lot of the tech earnings reports that that this build out is actually meeting expectations and is actually addressing a real need.
It absolutely is. And, you know, it's funny, you had the stock CoreWeave last night come out, and it's up 18% today. Absolutely blew earnings expectations away overall. And so, again, one that's in the AI business. And I think what the real message for people in the AI space right now is the street was questioning, okay, you're spending all this money. There's no question about the amount of capital going towards it. Are you starting to show returns? And I think what's happening is the firms are starting to answer that question with a yes, we are starting to show returns. It's not just about capital expenditure. It's about us creating more revenue for the companies. And I think that's really what's giving Wall Street some solace right now, is that these firms are starting to generate capital. Some would say finally, after, you know, a few years of incredibly heavy spending. On the other end of that, though, you have a company like Oracle, which has been spending as much as anybody. The stock is a bit higher, but they had announced some layoffs because they're like, we can't continue to put the capital forward that we're putting forward and keep the amount of employees we have. And any new technology, that's always going to be the concern for people, is the jobs versus the spending on the technology.
And then something that we have seen in other areas of tech, this was certainly the case in streaming media a couple of years ago, and that is you just spend billions upon billions of dollars in investor cash just to establish there is a demand for the product. And then taking that turn into profitability can be a painful one. And then there are some very obvious winners and losers. And we saw that in the streaming media gold rush a couple of years back. But right now in AI, it seems like everyone's a winner to some degree.
Yeah, maybe a bit. But I think part of it that, you know, as we also know happened in streaming media, which I think will happen here too, Rob, is the consolidation of firms. As some firms, you know, you're right, we've had an incredible run, but at some point we're going to hit another hiccup. And when we do, that's when you see firms start to buy each other or to merge. And that's if you think about when the internet first started, you know, you had firms like Netscape that were the winners, Yahoo that were the big winners. And that kind of changes over time as people start to learn how to use the technology in different ways than they did when it first started.
JJ Kinahan, Senior Vice President, CBOE Global Markets in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, before you pull the trigger on that big financial decision, take 24 hours to think it over.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and today we're looking at the 24-hour rule and how sleeping on a big financial decision or purchase before pulling the trigger can curb impulse spending, prevent buyers buyer's remorse and help you make the right long-term decision. We welcome Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And what are some examples of impulse purchases that should have required a 24-hour waiting period?
Rob, great topic, right? Consumers are at such a disadvantage, as sellers have gotten pretty darn good at having your hard-earned money being sent their way. And instances are just, it can go on and on. Like you go to your big box store, maybe you go to Home Depot, maybe you go to Costco, maybe you go somewhere else, and you're thinking about buying something, and then all of a sudden something catches your attention, and it's a much bigger purchase. So you walk out paying 10 times more than what was expected because something caught your eye. And so this is really critical to have an intentionality in terms of your spending rather than it be emotional and reactive.
And this is non-essential. So an example of that is you walk into Costco, and of course, what's the first thing you see when you walk into Costco, Ed? They're on your left, depending on the footprint of the store. It's a whole row of TVs, each one more with image clarity greater than the last. And they're all on sale. And maybe you think, maybe this is time to put a Jumbotron in my living room. That is an example of where the 24-hour rule can serve you very well.
Yeah, it's a great point, because whether it's 24 hours or even 48 hours, if you're going after a bigger price item, giving yourself a chance to take a break and take a breath. Because again, because of plastic, and we've gone from paper to plastic, Rob, right? We've gone from, you know, taking monies out of our wallet and paying that directly, let's say, to Costco, versus putting on a credit card and not having the physicality of money, which again puts consumers at a real disadvantage, because ultimately companies have gotten really good, again, at separating our hard-earned money from our wallets and over to them.
Now, what are some questions you need to ask yourself during that 24-hour purchasing waiting period?
Well, just alone, just to give yourself that chance to cool off is good. You know, put something maybe on an online in an online checkout cart and just leave it there for a day. You know, wants versus needs is very important, right? Do I want this or do I need this? Because oftentimes those two get blurred. But most importantly, if you're buying a larger ticket item, right, it may give you some additional benefit, additional happiness, or those kind of things. But does that come with a cash flow? Like, does buying something all of a sudden create more expenses for you? And while you might get that opportunity to enjoy it today, does it create more financial stress? And as people make more money, Rob, that's where that inflation creep comes in. You get a raise, you get a bonus, and then all of a sudden you want to go out and buy something big. We always tell clients and guide the public, you know what, do something, but don't do it with all those monies. Put some away from you first, and then go spend some of that money and have fun. But again, be very intentional about your purchases, because again, the odds are stacked against consumers.
And don't allow the idea of a limited time offer or a deep discount to mess with your head, because chances are that really good sale price that you see, it's going to come around again.
It's an excellent point, right? There's very few one-of-ones, right? And those one-of-ones tend to be a much higher ticket item. So ultimately what you said, again, remember, all your listeners out there have got to remember that the odds are stacked against you. Businesses have gotten very good of taking money out of your wallet. So again, having that intentionality, giving yourself a break to really think through it rather than being reactive, where these businesses are preying on your emotionality and those kind of things. Again, just taking time, taking an effort, taking a 24-hour break at least can go a long way in creating that financial independence where your future financial self will be very thankful.
Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, a discussion of a big transaction in the NBA, and we're not talking about players.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Los Angeles Lakers are being sold again, with Bob Iger and Joshua Kushner buying the storied franchise for a valuation of $12.5 billion. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Mark Gannis, president and co-founder, Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. A $12.5 billion valuation for the LA Lakers. Where does that place the Lakers in terms of valuable sports franchises?
Well, it would place the Lakers as the highest in the United States, the highest non-NFL team by fairly significant amount. The You're going to see the new numbers coming out for valuations. You're going to have the Cowboys in the upper teens, mid to upper teens, the Patriots, the Giants, and those teams will all be higher and are higher. The Yankees and the Dodgers would be in the same range or higher. But this is a monster number coming only a year after Mark Walter agreed to buy 70% of the Dodgers for a $10 billion number.
Now, when we talk about a sports owner buying into a team, you look at it as part of a long-term plan and a long-term vision. This is me reading the book Showtime, Mark, so I know the Jerry Buss story all too well, where he wanted to turn the Lakers into an entertainment destination as much as it was a professional basketball team. So, but now we're seeing it as more or less of an investment vehicle, and you can cash in and then cash out and get a pretty good return on your investment.
Yeah, this is unusual. I will say this is like a house flip is what Mark Walter has done here. And that does not happen with sports franchises often. So people have been speculating, does it have something to do with the federal investigation into the insurance companies that have provided the funds for TWG, his holding company? Does it have to do with his health? Because Mark's history is that he buys, manages, enhances, and retains. So this is very unusual to have done this a year ago and to be selling a year and flip it a year later. But your point is absolutely right. These are assets that you look at long term. Sports assets are very valuable for the financial community these days, private equity firms, sovereign wealth funds, in part because they're an uncorrelated asset. They're recession resistant, and they're among the few industries that AI has no chance of disrupting. It's part of the experiential economy, and it needs to be done live in sports. So AI will enhance and won't displace. So there are lots of reasons why smart money is moving big money into sports.
It's also interesting, this is going to be a sports media story as well. It almost has to be, because Bob Iger, who has done two tours of Disney, tours of duty at Disney, he's part of the ownership group. So clearly, we could see evolution in the way people experience or watch or access NBA games.
No question about that. Bob Iger's creativity, his focus on brand acquisition and brand development, his marketing ability, and the fact that he's from L.A. so that he, for the last 50 years, so that he has tremendous friends, relationships, and frankly, people owe him out there as well, all bode well for what the future of this team will be. Interestingly enough, the Lakers have a long-term local media rights deal with, I believe it's a subsidiary of Charter, and it's on the market also right now. So we'll see if he decides to buy that, but it's a very lucrative deal. It's one of the reasons that the Lakers are worth so much, are worth so much more than almost any other team.
Mark Annis, president, co-founder, Sports Corp. Limited in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.